Hello, everyone. This is Christopher with Jonja.net. I had a great pleasure reading a graphic novel here called Moriarty, The Dark Chamber, and I've gotten a chance to speak to the writer of this great thing, Daniel Corey. Daniel, thanks for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me.
I was a little curious about the process of getting something to a comic book, and whether it was similar to one would might call a typical book or something to print. Do you just kind of come up with this with the story, or have the manuscript that you have to shop around?
You know, for me, I was completely working on spec, trying to make a name for myself. I know some guys will be popular in maybe some other media and be approached by a comic company to write something, but that wasn't happening with me. I started off in the theater actually writing plays.
Okay.
And from there I transitioned into like screenplays. I wrote a novel, stuff like that, and eventually landed in writing comics. And I didn't know anybody or have any type of connection, so had to spend some years kind of building those connections, and eventually getting, Moriarty is the culmination of several years of hard labor,
and,
both writing and networking and shopping it. And, we're very, very happy that we landed Image Comics, because that's just the ideal place for us to be. It was a real labor of love getting it there. So
then I take it you kind of went to them with essentially a finished product with artwork and or at least the beginnings of the artwork?
That's right. Yeah. Most of the publishers, when you submit work, they never want to see your writing, for example, that's just a script.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to see a script,
Right.
Unless, again, you're some guy that's popular in some other medium and, you got a special connection. But for complete outsiders, first timers like me, they want to see, basically a final product or something close to it, because they want to know that you have the wherewithal to put something together and to finish something. They want to make sure you can produce the pages. But the artist that I work with is Anthony Diachidua. And the first thing we had done, we built several demo books for Moriarty as different conventions came along. The first convention we did, we had like 8 pages and some concept pics, and we put together a demo book of that. And it was a few demo books and that I ended up sending it to Image. I think they got like 10 or 12 pages, finished work, and what we did was, I put it together, I printed it and got it staple bound. It looked just like a comic book. It just said preview on the cover, and it had like 10 or 12, sequential pages and concept pictures. And I had a page that summarized the whole story. And, it was at that point that they contacted me. I think it was December of 2009. And said that they were interested, and that began a long conversation, which took place over through most of 2010, just discussing the book and what we do and this, that, the other. And finally, we signed the contract in 2010. First issue came out May 2011.
Right.
It was like, even from the point where they expressed interest and wanted to do it, it was still a long journey.
Sure.
So. It's like, just like in most of the creative industry, it's like you get the gig, but once you're in the gig, there's still a lot of work you got to do.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah. I guess we should mention that Moriarty, when it was originally published, was a 4-book series. Is that right?
Yeah. I had planned it as, as a mini series, but they wanted to do it ongoing. And that was kind of the conversation from the start. When it first came out, a lot of folks thought it was just going to be a mini series, but it's been ongoing all along, and now that we're through with the Dark Chamber storyline and we're going into Lazarus Tree here in just a couple of weeks, folks are starting to see that it is an ongoing series. And I'm glad the retailers got that message, because I know they're ordering it, and we're doing just as well as we did with the Dark Chamber orders. Yeah, I'm happy that everybody got that message. But yeah, we are definitely ongoing.
Yeah, excellent. I just wanted to clarify that when it originally published, it was like May of 2011, and now just this September is the trade paperback of the Dark Chamber, which is just being released, I guess, in preparation for the release of your next miniseries, I guess you would call it, which you said is Lazarus Tree.
Yeah, the next storyline is called The Lazarus Tree, and that's basically how we'll go. We'll keep numbering up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, but each story arc will have its own distinct name, its own episode name, like the Star Wars movies or what
right,
have you.
Yeah, exactly. I actually kind of like it that way. I never like going to the comic book store and you see it's like issue 57 of something.
Yeah.
You're thinking, well, I'm not going to be able to get into that. And I'm not going to buy 56 other issues. You know, if I see something that's issue 4 or it's issue 1 and it's a story of 1 of 4, it's like, oh, well, okay, I can get into that. I can go back. If I miss the first couple, I can go back and buy and read them without breaking the bank and trying to catch up and figure out what's going on. And if I didn't catch the first one, I can jump in on the second story. And then if I like the second story, I can jump back on, you know, then I can get the first story. So I kind of like the mini series idea when it comes to the comics.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Lazarus Tree is a good jumping on point. You know, if you pick it up in the shop, which I would think if you're seeing it in the shop, you'd have to pick it up because of the mesmerizing, amazing cover that Anthony has given us. But, you know, if you pick that up, you like it, then, you know, go pick up that trade, the Dark Chamber trade, and you'll be, you know, fully up to date on everything. You know, the Lazarus Tree stands alone pretty well, but, you know, you can get a lot of the background stuff by reading Dark Chamber. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I would think so. Yeah, I should mention the artwork is really well done. I love the look of it. It's kind of that neat. It's not that polished, finished look that you see where it's like, oh, it was done. It looks like someone did it on a computer or a movie screen, you know, for a movie screen or something. It still has very much. It's drawn, but it's still very vivid and where it needs to be. And then it's the dark and the shadows when it needs to be. Your artist, you said Anthony.
Anthony Diachidua.
Diachidua. Thank you. I'm glad you said his name.
Hats
off to him. I really like his artwork. I think it really fits the story very well.
Yeah, he has a real looseness to his style. I know that there's a lot of energy in it. You know, that's what a lot of people have been saying lately. This kind of he's got a real looseness to it, in a good way. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I also noticed that it seemed like there was, even in the same frame, sometimes you'd have one character that seemed very very sketched and almost stenciled, and then another character would be a little bit more rounded and soft, depending on how that person fit into the story, which made it really, really, really interesting, really neat, neat to look at as well as to read.
Yeah, yeah. Anthony has a really good way of expressing moments, and he'll do things like that, you know. He'll bring out one character a little more, like the person's in focus a little more in camera, so that we'll understand what his moment is that he's going through. And he, you know, it's a good way, just as an actor, expressing the way the characters will look in their bodies or in their face in a moment. You know, playing dualities when somebody's telling a lie and they're, you know, like you can always tell if in Anthony's panels that if who's lying, you know.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, you know, they're not showing it to the other character, but we're seeing it as the audience, kind of thing, like a good actor would do.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I do want to ask, kind of go just into the characters themselves, is why Moriarty? I saw you said you were a fan of Sherlock Holmes and Conan Doyle. But as you admitted, Moriarty was almost a non-character in the stories. He was mentioned on an aside, and then finally he kind of does the big reveal just so, you know, Conan Doyle could just, so he could kill off Holmes and get on to other things. So why focus on Moriarty?
He hasn't really had his day as a leading man, you know. Certainly in the stories, he was just an idea, and people love that. You know, people are fascinated by the idea of Moriarty, and, you know, they're fascinated by the idea of Holmes, but Moriarty is even more fascinating in that way because he was never actualized as a person in the original stories, and he's just that ultimate bad guy out there causing all the bad stuff that's going on. And if only we could find him, you know,
we could
set the world right. And it makes people feel good about themselves, I think, in a way, to know that there's one bad guy out there doing everything. But he is, you know, popular culture has elevated him to the level of ever-present arch nemesis. You know, if you ask most people who's Sherlock's arch enemy, they'll say, you know, Professor Moriarty. You know, but again, he was never really a person in the stories. Now, a lot of the movies and TV shows and stuff, we see Professor Moriarty in those because people love him so much they wanted to make him the villain in all their movies and TV shows.
Right.
You know, but again, as far as a leading man, haven't seen it. Now, there's been some novels where he was the lead character, so I want to acknowledge that. That has been done in novel form, but it's never been done in comics, nor has it been done in television or film. So I believe, at least I, as far as I know, and I haven't had anybody on Twitter correct me yet, you know, this is the first comic book that has Professor Moriarty as a leading man. And, you know, and I wanted to make him the lead because I really wanted to get into his fictional head and ask questions and figure out what makes him tick, what makes him work. It's fascinating to me because this is a guy who who's a bad guy. But then again, bad people don't think of themselves as bad.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't think of himself as evil. He doesn't think of the thing that what he's doing is wrong. He just thinks he's ordering his existence and controlling his life and taking charge of himself. So is he really in his heart a bad person if he doesn't think he's doing bad things? You know, there's a lot of really murky questions you can ask with you're using a character like him as the lead. So that's, you know, that really drew me to him.
So did you draw on other Holmes stories when doing the comics, or do you plan to in future?
Yeah, I make reference to some of the stories, and I bring in some of the characters, some of the supporting cast come in. And I plan to do more of that in future stories. I don't want to say too much.
No, of course not.
But
by the books.
Anybody that's read The Dark Chamber will know there's some familiar players that show up in the story.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I don't want to get into too much detail. Just like you said, I want people to just dangle the carrot.
Yeah, but there's one person who's not in the story though. That's Sherlock Holmes himself.
That's true. That's true. That,
yes.
That is a that spoiler's kind of given away a little bit, kind of right on the cover, or I guess on the back cover.
So. Right. Yeah. That's kind of the premise. So I'm not really giving anything away, but that's the whole premise of Moriarty's being at the point in the time of the Dark Chamber is that Sherlock's been out of the picture for 20 years, and you know the duel at Reichenbach Falls that we all know about from the Final Problem story. Well, it just turned out a little differently, and in our version of the Holmes mythos, and Holmes is gone. He's dead. He's been gone for 20 years. World War I's breaking out, and Moriarty is a lost soul trying to figure out what to do with himself.
I wasn't sure if I was going to bring it up, but since you did, yeah, I really like the idea that once Holmes is gone, Moriarty literally finds himself, well, now I got nothing to do, you know?
Yeah. He doesn't know what to do with himself. His whole reason for, he didn't realize, you know, that was his whole reason for living. You know, being able to duel at the hand of Sherlock, but that's what that was, you know. And when Sherlock is gone, you know, it's going to take a big jolt to get him back into the game again. And you know, that's what our story is. Our story is gives him that big jolt to get him back into the game.
Now, you actually managed in Dark Chamber, you managed to weave in a little bit of little mythology. There's a character with a name of Tartarus, I believe it is, and
yep.
And that sort of thing. You're talking this next series of books called The Lazarus Tree, which is again another on the edge there on the mythology and stuff. Is that just another interest that you like to weave in?
Yeah, you know, it's always helpful to help people, bring people into a story to give them something that they can identify with. And, you know, when you're using stories and myth that have been around for thousands of years, you know, that's not a bad way to get people involved because, you know, it brings them in a way, it brings them into something they understand. You know, I have this lead character, the villain character in the Dark Chamber storyline is called Tartarus. And even if you don't know who Tartarus is, we know that he's one of the Titans, you know, that predated the Greek gods. So, you know, folks can understand, folks know about the Titans and so they can kind of get drawn in that way. And, you know, the idea of this villain, he thinks of himself as a Titan. He thinks of himself as being superior to everybody else and all this sort of thing. That helps us understand what Moriarty is up against. So yeah. And, you know, I'm not going to give away the secret of the Lazarus Tree, but, you know, the name is kind of compelling, I think.
Yeah,
and,
very much.
You know, just that Lazarus, that, you know, we all know Lazarus was the guy in the Bible that Jesus brought back from the grave. So what does that mean relative to Moriarty? You know,
I wonder.
So I think it's kind of intriguing. I think it is. I don't know.
I think so. And I'm definitely looking forward to it. We actually, you know, got ahead of myself. I was going to ask what's next for you. And obviously the Lazarus Tree will be it. So this will be the focus of all your concentration there for a little while. Or is this like in the can and now it's just a matter of getting published and then you're ready, you're free to kind of get on to the next one?
Yeah, it's the script's in the can. We're still drawing the pages. You know, issue 5's in the can. Issue 6 is mostly, 7 is mostly done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how we go production wise. But yeah, I'm already on to the next thing. You know, I've written the Lazarus Tree already and doing little tweaks in here and there as the script goes to the letterer Dave right. Lanfear and such. But working ahead right now. You know, when the Dark Chamber issue 1 came out, I was close to a year ahead on the writing.
Gotcha.
So yeah, want to make sure everything stays on schedule. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Daniel, I want to thank you very much for talking with me tonight. I look forward to the Lazarus Tree. You've definitely got me interested now.
Thanks.
The Dark Chamber did it. It pulled me in. So.
Oh, you've been pulled into the Dark Chamber, and now there's no escaping.
There is no escape. Now, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you very much, and good luck with everything.
You.
And we'll keep our eyes on you and everything you got coming down the pike.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.